Hello, and welcome to AMO Kenzoku, episode 81. We are a group of four Bubblegum Crisis Boomer otaku who wanted an excuse to talk about anime, manga, and whatever else we feel like talking about at the time. The Kenzoku are...
Hey all, I'm Mike.
Hello, I'm Nick.
I'm Dylan.
And I'm Sam. This episode is being recorded on June 4th, 2026. And we are here to talk about Paranoia Agent. And with that, Ashin. So yes, we're discussing the Satoshi Kon early 2000s. Let me get the actual year up here. What was it? 2004 television anime Paranoia Agent. And we are going to spoil all of it, of course, because it's not really worth discussing if you can't spoil it, especially this show. I will say this is obviously created, directed by Satoshi Kon, written largely by, I have the name, Seishi Minakami, who I'm not really familiar with. I see a collection of kind of 2000s, just 2000s-ish stuff in here to the credits, but nothing super standout. A lot of episodes here and there. Do you guys know of any other notable figures in this production? Oh, Hirosawa Susumu doing the music. Actually, that's a big name. Big favorites around here at AMO.
Yeah, big favorite here at AMO Kenzoku. We were kind of looking at a few of those other things. So a few other people I think of exceeding note in this. One is Masashi Ando, who is the character designer, animation director, who if you look at his credits by number of things, it's not that many. But if you look at things by just the level, let's see here, character designer and animation director for Your Name, Spirited Away, Princess Mononoke,
wow,
Paprika, this, On Your Mark.
It looks like he's been keeping up with Key Animation as well. So
Key Animation. He spent a lot of years in Ghibli Jail, which, as we all know, is one of the best jails to be in.
Best or worst, who can say?
Yeah.
Even the latest, Boy and the Heron, he was Key Animation. That's...
Yeah. So, as we know, Miyazaki would just give up character design on his movies to just anyone who's not incredibly talented or anything like that. So, yeah. And another one who I think is kind of interesting as another side is Hideki Hamasu, who is the designer for Maromi character and also did some animation, key animation work and stuff. Has done a ton of key animation, a lot of also in looks like probably working with Masashi Ando on stuff, because a lot of the same high quality things I see key animators on just like tons of high quality productions and movies, the other pretty much everything else that Satoshi Kon did, tons of other things, was the character designer for original rerunning Kenshin TV, things going back to key animation for like Giant Robo, Gunsmith Cats, back into being an in-betweener on Arcadia of My Youth. And on the voice side of things, there's a ton of voice actors in this, but I think probably the one who has the single longest scroll on ANN is probably going to be our good man detective, who's done by Toshihiko Seki, and his scroll is you're about 100 lines, 100 things for non-anime roles, which just gives you a thing. And then his anime roles literally just, it goes on for a very long time with lots of main leads across stuff forever, going back through like small things in like back to Nadia and stuff like that. But then tons of other stuff today, like even through today being one of the main kaiju in like kaiju number 8, and just lead voices in so many movies and TVs and everything. Like, he's Muzan Kibutsuji from Demon Slayer, tons of other stuff. So he's one of those people you're just like, oh yeah, when you want that really like deep detective voice, you go for him, or if you want him to be Moose from Ranma 1/2.
Yeah, it looks like, looking at his credits, he's a big enough name that a lot of the list is padded out by, like, he's in big things that get multiple TV shows and movies and stuff. So
yeah,
he's a big guy.
Yeah, he's been in a million things.
I also would like to point out on the VA side, a relatively obscure person named, you know, Mitsuishi Kotono, who is probably for this podcast known best for playing Misato in Eva. She, I think, probably, in my opinion, played the, like, was the probably the best cast character, because she was the tutor slash prostitute, bipolar, her dual personality character, and I thought she nailed that. Probably my favorite episode, that she really, really nailed the character super well there. And then another interesting casting choice, somebody who really doesn't do much anime is Haruko Momoi was Marumi, which was a very, it was a spot on role, I feel like, but it's an unusual casting choice, but she doesn't really do much anime. I mean, ever. She never really did much anime, so.
Yeah, she was always more of a singer and kind of underground idol, I would call her.
Yeah. Yeah, she was one of the first big, like, Akiba street idols, I guess, back in the 90s and early aughts.
Yeah.
Oh, that's really interesting. Yeah, I didn't even think to look for at some of those more obscure ones, too. There was one I wanted to point out, but I'll save that for later when we get into the story, because it's more story-related.
Well, I have another one that I spotted by voice, which is Mina Tominaga was in the family drama episode as the girl, and she is most well known to hear as Noa Izumi from Patlabor. So I recognized her voice immediately, amongst doing a ton of other things. But whenever she's in something, I'm just like, this is going to be great.
I'm really bad at voice actors, shamefully. Like, I recognize voices, but I don't. The best I can do is, like, except for a few, like Koyas, I recognize him all the time. But most of them I just know, like, other characters. I know, oh, that's that character, and that's that other character.
Yeah.
I'm not good with the names. Cool. So I guess with the bit of production stuff out of the way, before we move on, I did want to mention one thing is that I was trying to find out some more about background about the production of this. And apparently this is, I guess I'll put it in a crude way, this is a kind of a dumping ground for Kon's ideas, unused ideas from stuff that he had done, up till that point. And just to put this in perspective, this was done 2004. It's right after Tokyo Godfathers. So Perfect Blue, Millennium Actress, Tokyo Godfathers, and then Paranoia Agent, and then Paprika. So he had a lot of time to come up with a lot of crazy stuff that just didn't fit into other things. And he said this was like his opportunity to use that, which kind of explains some of the stuff.
Definitely. I see some common themes from other movies and certain episodes for sure in this show. So specifically, yeah. I will say the final episode has a lot of parallels to the end of Paprika in all the all the good and bad ways.
Yeah. So I guess with that, we can kind of move into the more plot of it. Dylan, do you want to take a stab at doing a short description of what it's about?
You missed the setup, man. He's supposed to take a swing at it, right?
Oh,
man.
Oof. Yeah, you want to take a swing?
I'll take a swing at it. So the plot is that a popular character designer for a mascot character designer is assaulted on the street, and the detectives try to figure it out, and the assaults keep spreading, and then in the end it becomes that the whole thing is a crazy mass societal paranoia that leads to the actual near destruction of Tokyo by these forces of Shonenbat. And there's a lot of questions about what's reality and what's not.
Can we maybe start there? I still don't understand what the heck it was. And I'll be honest, I was a little, much like Nick said with Paprika, like I was kind of like, wait, what was that? I don't get it. I don't know. Maybe it's one of those things where, like, if I watch it a bunch of times, I might be able to make some sense. But it didn't make sense to me.
No, I would agree, and I'll start with the first strong opinion of this episode. I think the show has a phenomenal first 4 episodes,
mm-hmm.
and then eps 5 through 11 were a titanic mess. 12 barely kind of starting to wrap it up, and then 13 just gives it an ending. But I that's kind of my opinion of it.
Yeah, I would say I largely agree with that, although I think there were 2 gems in the middle.
I can agree there were 2 gems in the middle. They were there towards later ones. The episode with the suicide pact, mm-hmm. I like that one a lot. And then the animation running episode.
Yep.
Those are the 2. Everything else, man. What I'll say, the first episode where I let out an audible WTF on in a bad way was Ep 5 with the Holy Warrior. Like, the quality took a massive nosedive.
You know, I'm going to give them a little bit of credit there, and maybe this is a stretch, because I agree with you that it did feel like the quality took a nosedive, but I also feel like they were kind of leaning into it, because
I get what you're saying for 5, because they were trying to kind of be a bit... It almost felt like a non-sequitur, like, Abe Nobashi ep of sorts, mm-hmm. where they were trying to be a bit more comical about it, and I can respect that. But then there were so many other eps where the animation quality simply was bad. And
yeah.
When the first 4 episodes look as good as they do, like, those first 4 episodes could be parsed together, and you could have called it a Satoshi Kon film, and I would have believed you. Like, they're animated so well.
Yeah.
And the quality, really, and the character, everything about the first 4 eps is just simply a masterpiece in animation. And I really don't know what happened in between. I have a running theory, and this is just a gut feeling, but, like, if you look at the key animation credits for a 13-ep show, this series has a ton of key animators. Am I wrong here?
It's a lot.
And
a lot of different, like, animation directors, mm-hmm. and all this stuff here.
And I feel like that was partially probably a mixture of Kon trying to willing to let new people try new things, and also like Sam implied, it's kind of became a dumping ground of his unused concepts and ideas from his feature films, which is fine to do, but it leads to I would say, a very inconsistent experience. And that I didn't love about Paranoigent, I will say.
Yeah. What about you, Dylan?
I appreciate it in the middle, because it definitely gets a little crazy there, but it also, you're just like, oh, well, it's an episode, so it can be a little bit weird. It doesn't have to necessarily have this whole tie together. But I think where it does get a little bit weird is that you feel like, okay, I'm being led down this really cool, like, detective story, and then they kind of drop it and kind of partially pick it up for, you know, half the series. So it's not like it was set up to be like a weird, crazy, experimental, every episode doing something weird that's really unrelated. But then in the middle, it kind of did that, and then it went back. I definitely agree with the drop-off in quality in the middle there. I think some of it also was, I think partially, yeah, due to having these different groups and people working differently, and who knows about whatever other budgetary and time and all these other constraints and things that are going on there, and people are kind of being like, all right, well, let's play around a little bit. We can do something that's a little weird. And then I also feel like the animation quality for the beginning and the end episodes, it's so high that maybe it was something where they're like, all right, we're putting our effort in there, and these middle ones we're going to have some fun with. We'll put something out and it'll look okay. But some parts of it, I agree, some parts of the middle parts just look bad and like unfinished.
I mean, I would say there are some parts that might, like I think it was ep 12 actually, Radar Man. Yeah, it's when the opening scene where younger detective guy who is now a Batman-esque vigilante hero, which was fine, that seems like a very quirky Satoshi-kun thing, but that opening scene where he's fighting the weird mutated shonen bat, man, that looked so bad. Like, I could count the physical frames of animation. Like, when he slams into the wall and falls, I cringed. It was just unforgivably poorly done. I don't know if it was a budgetary thing or a rush for the episode or whatever, but that was really rough. And then just, if you look at any stills of the big, ugly shonen bat, it just doesn't look good.
I don't know. I feel like it depends. Like, to me, it was fine. It wasn't a very interesting character to begin with, you know? So
yeah, I get that. You know, for the plot, I thought it started really strong, and then it decided to break the trend that it set, which I didn't like, because it opens up with such a, like, Coen Brothers-esque or like Odd Taxi, where you see these, you know, character focused episodes, and you start to see where each character is connected, right? Like, you know, like when you went by up two, you see the kid where everybody is thinking, oh, he's shown him bad, and then you see just a single scene with his tutor, and then the next step it's about the tutor and her wild double life, and it's like, oh yeah, this is definitely ideas from Perfect Blue he didn't get to use, because that was like the most Perfect Blue ep was ep three, Double Lips. Even the title, right? Double Lips versus I think Double Bind was the name of the drama that they were in. And
Ep 3
is my favorite ep. Like, just, it was executed super well, and it did the psychological thriller stuff really well. And to me, this ep 3 was like Khan firing on all cylinders, doing what he does best. And then leading into 4, which again segued really well, because then, you know, ep 3 ends with, oh, Shonen Bat's been captured, and then, you know, it talks about the probably biggest POS in the entire series, the fat bastard cop, as I call him. Because we find out later what he was doing. I'm like, oh, I gotta wash this filth off me now. But
but it was good though.
It was a good character as far as making him just vile and irredeemable. But, and again, it was all connecting well with these threads. And then they break the trend with the Holy Warrior ep, and then that continues to break from there until they very loosely try to kind of wrap it up. Because then you get some episodes where it's just characters that are completely unrelated to the main plot getting, and that's not intrinsically bad. Like, for example, I think the Happy Family Planning episode was cool. I want to spend some time discussing that one probably, because that one definitely was left open-ended, which I do like a lot.
Yeah.
And then, of course, the animation running episode, which was a very tongue-in-cheek topic, obviously. You know, and clearly inspired by staff of the show. So,
yeah,
that was appreciated. And then, they gave it an ending of sorts.
It was just particularly disappointing because, like, you know, I've seen the first episode, like, probably maybe 5 times. And so, like, I wasn't super excited by watching that. Like, although it's been so long, I almost forgot most of it, but I was like super invested at ep 4, and I'm like, oh man, I can't wait to find out what happens next. And then it's like, okay, going up 5, and it's the Holy Warrior, and it's like, okay, let's see where they're taking this. I don't get it, but it's interesting, it's different, and then it just gets worse from there in terms of like to me, a good show, and I've probably said this before, is like these kind of mystery things, is you answer a question and you raise a question, you know, like mm-hmm. to keep you like going along. This one never really answered a question. Like, they spend a bunch of time raising them, and you kind of like show you some connections in the first four, and they do some of that where it's like, you know, showing the connections between characters, and then, you know, okay, well, why are they connected? Why, what is that? What's the meaning of that? But then after that, they just stop, and it's just more questions. And I don't know why.
And then
Mike, go ahead.
Before I pass to Mike, I will also say, they also did a lot of red herrings that went nowhere. Like, the old lady and the old man ultimately yes. were purposeless characters, in my opinion.
Yes.
They didn't do any... The old man was just cool because he was the narrator for the Next Step previews, which, by the way, amazing Next Step previews. I will say, that mm-hmm. concept is... mm-hmm. I adore how they did it. And also the little gimmick at the end, at the very, yeah. very end, I thought that was cool. Like, that I applaud. I'm like, okay, soft clap, golf clap, I again, a lot of artistic decisions that I absolutely adore with this, but it's so frustrating because so much of the middle felt mishandled. But yeah. anyway,
the old lady in particular, before we give it over to Mike, is that she really bothered me because, man, talk about red herring. They lead her on to be significant, right? They even imply heavily mm-hmm. that she's connected to this young girl that they bring in, and then we find out at the end, oh, she's not connected at all. She's just some random lady.
Yeah, some random.
But then
old lady.
She shows up. They continue bringing her out though, later on, as if she is. And then, yeah, that was disappointing. Yeah, Mike, what do you think?
I rewatching it was interesting. Man, I had forgotten a lot about this show. I remembered the group trying to off themselves plot being a bigger thing in the show than it was, so I guess that ep stuck with me, and then I conflated some of the show with Welcome to the NHK and the similar arc of that, so I had definitely forgotten where this went, and it was an interesting rewatch. I'm with you on the first four really being solid and taking it somewhere that the show then diverged from, though I didn't love the Holy Warrior ep. It seemed like they were kind of trying to do a Millennium Actress, but worse on that one. Like, as far as the what's yeah. real and what isn't kind of blurring.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can kind of see that. Definitely not as good as Millennium
yeah.
Actress.
As far as a transition to what came later, I felt like the Rumors ep was good, with the housewives just talking together.
Really? I actually thought that was one of the most purposeless episodes. But that's my opinion.
I feel like it has a purpose with what comes after, because it's kind of showing that, like, the Shonen Bat meme is getting out of hand and out of control.
Hmm.
Yeah, it was interesting watching that up, in that I did kind of, it made you kind of question what you were seeing, and like it's almost like some of these might have been real and some of them were just the ladies making stuff up. Like, obviously, like, you know, oh, I saw this baseball game and then this happened, and you know, it was like half jokes but half like real thing. I thought that was kind of interesting, that interplay between the ladies, and then, you know, her husband gets attacked and she's like so excited that she's finally got some good juicy gossip for to share with the ladies. It was almost like a long setup for an okay punchline.
Yeah, there is that, but I just felt like it was, you know, it wasn't necessarily a great bridge between what came before and what came after, but it was a bridge and it needed to be there.
Mm-hmm. That definitely felt like one of those kind of standalone ideas that probably was like, hey, it'd be cool to do a thing like this. And,
yeah.
Well, here we go. I'll just stick it in there.
Yeah. And it then kind of transitioned from the detective plot to some of the other standalone ideas before we then got back to things, I feel like. Now, whether those other things needed to be there, I don't know, but some of them were interesting. And I'm not sure if you could get them if you didn't have the thing escaping and if you didn't have Shonen Bat escaping and getting out of control in all these wild places. Like, you kind of get the feeling eventually that Shonen Bat can turn up anywhere, which you need for him turning up later on in certain places.
Do you, though? Like, to me, that cheapened him, right? It's like, well, he could just be anywhere now and anything, like...
Well, in that sense, at least it got me invested that, you know, now it's asking you, make sure to ask the question, what is he? Is he a figment? Or is he a real thing? Is he a boogie monster? Like, you know, at least it poses the question, because initially, right, they try to bait you. It's like, oh, they caught him. And then it turns out it was a copycat. And then they did the cool thing of he was like admitting, he's like, okay, yeah, I attacked this guy. I attacked the chubby kid and the fat cop. And then that makes sense, because those were the two outlier victims, right, that didn't make sense if you go through the logic of, oh, these people were felt cornered. So,
well, but he did, I mean, the cop did feel cornered, right?
Yeah, like, true, but
that's why he was doing all the crime.
But for the cop, it was more about, I would say, the threat for him, it turned out, was his daughter, right? Because his daughter was the one that actually was in the really dire situation, thanks to him. Mm-hmm. And I thought it was cool. And then, of course, you get the huge, you know, surprise of the air quotes real showing about actually now murdering the copycat, not just attacking, but actually killing him. And then you're like, oh, that escalated. And then that's when I feel like the plot really just kind of went to pieces, as far as like then Shonen Bat got turned into like this weird concept that kept escalating, which was fine. But then the whole MacGuffin at the end was like, oh, he was a whole made-up thing 10 years ago because she couldn't tell the truth about her dog getting hit by a car. I'm like, wait, what?
Yeah, none of that explained exactly, like, what Shonen Bat actually was.
Yeah, right? Like, exactly. And, like, why that giant black tar thing happened. Like, in that sense, the ending felt very weird and incongruous, like the ending of Paprika. But, you know, again, I'm being hypercritical because the first four episodes just set it up so well. I got so invested early on, and then it just fumbled the middle. I think the ending was okay, but I just feel like the path there in the middle was really perilous and sketchy. With those aforementioned two episodes that we mentioned previously, the Suicide Pact episode and the Animation Run episode, two of my more favorite episodes, I'd say, of the whole season. I just feel like 13 was maybe a stretch. I think if this was like 10 eps, it probably would have felt better. Mm-hmm. But I feel like 13 was a bit of a stretch.
I'll be honest, I was watching it and I was thinking that thing early on, I was like, some of these episodes are a little bit too long, even in the first four, and it being a TV series was kind of to its detriment. Like, if it was, it should have been like an OVA or something like that.
Yeah, I agree.
So let's talk about Happy Family Planning episode.
Oh yeah, please. I definitely want to unpackage this episode.
So before we get into like the content of the episode, I think it's worth pointing out that this is the guy who did this animation is semi-notorious at this period in time for these episodes. I don't know if anybody cared about Paranoia Agent, but he did an episode in Sousei no Aquarion the year after, which is the same thing. They basically let him do it all himself, and people hated it because it looked so different. But the guy's clearly a very skilled animator.
I personally loved it because I was okay with the stark change in style, because it was characters that were completely unrelated to the main plot. So I was okay. And then when you think about the content of it, I also was more okay with it. But I don't want to jump the gun on giving my take before we get to diving into the content of the app, because I do think this is one of the most this might be the most thought-provoking episode, honestly. Because it leaves a lot of interesting unanswered questions that forces the audience to infer things, which I love. And I think Kon does a really good job of. So
just to credit this guy, this is Satoru Utsunomiya. And one thing that I noticed kind of on accident is that the inn that they stay at near the end is called Utsunomiya.
Yeah, I saw that too. I noticed that.
I was like, that's an interesting name.
I was like, yep, I had the same thought and read it out. I was like, nice job.
Yeah. So these three people who meet on the internet to try and commit suicide together, and they find out one of them is a young girl, and they basically spend the whole episode trying to find a way to commit suicide without her in kind of hilarious ways.
It's such a black comedy gag episode.
Yeah.
They executed it so well. Like, the execution for this episode was immaculate, I will say. Like, this ep alone made up a lot of the previous eps before its, like, follies, because when I watched it, I was like, oh man, this was one of the most, like, moving, obviously absurdly dark topic, but they executed it with amazing comedic timing. Mm-hmm. And that's so hard to do. So I'm so impressed with the execution of this episode.
This episode has my favorite line in the whole series, which is after they basically fail at hanging themselves, and the old guy goes, oh man, I thought I was going to die.
Yeah.
Oh, and then he's like, no, it's for the best, we should be quiet. And then the bigger guy, Zebra, was like, but wouldn't it be bad to leave her alone in the mountains this late at night? And he's like, crap. So they go, and then, you know, there's that touching moment. She's like, don't leave me alone. And I'm like, man, I just kind of like welled up there. Like, it's such a, they formed such a, within that one episode, you could see the bond they were forming. Right. And it was so cool. And then at the very, well, again, I don't want to jump the gun too much, but just,
oh, that's fine. We can just jump around.
Like, so, okay, so I want to know what everybody's takes are, like, on what actually, like, happened to all of them at the end, because I have a theory, and I'm interested to know.
I want to rewatch the ep to see when those disappeared.
Yeah, right, because I think we all agree that at some point they do succeed. We're just not sure when that is,
I think they actually, at the very beginning, in that apartment where they were like huffing the carbon monoxide from the and they like oh and they took all the sleeping pills. I'm of the opinion that that's when they actually died. I don't think they evacuated the building. I think the building was demolished on top of them, and when they wake up outside, that was already their, let's call it, their ghosts doing their thing. Because if you remember, I believe the next scene after that was the train scene. And at the very end of that, rather, that's when they're about to go, and then that other dude like beats them to it, and there's that awkward pause, and then you see Zebra standing there for a second, and then you see the guy that jumped crawl out, and he's all bloody. He's like, "Oh man, what a mess!" And he's seen walking, and he kind of cocks his head sideways, like, "What?" So that was the first indicator.
Wasn't
that,
he like, that hurt more than I thought it would,
yeah,
or something?
Yeah, yeah. And it's like, that was the first indicator that I was like, oh, they're already, at least he's already dead. That was what I realized. I was like, oh, that's what's going on. So that's my theory.
Which, by the way, just the way he jumped in front of the train was kind of hilarious too.
Yeah, the Mario jump, pose he had. Just little details of the episode were just done so well.
Yeah, I think I agree. I was kind of trying to think about when they actually died, and that made sense to me.
Seemed the most likely to me, too, yeah.
Because also, like, the workers don't notice them, right? Like,
right.
When they're...
Like, nobody else is actually directly interacting. And then when you think about it...
the workers don't have a view of them, either.
Mm-hmm. And then when they're at the inn, right, they're singing in the bath, and you see some people walking around, like, what's going on? So, like, that's probably them thinking they're hearing things, because obviously they're right. And then, when they're in, about to go to sleep in their room, and Shonen Bat appears, they swing the door open, and he looks like it's the only time where you see Shonen Bat freak out, right? He's like, what the heck? And then he runs away. So, that to me all indicates that people, like, Shonen Bat just saw a ghost. Is how I interpreted it. And then the most clear message is at the very, very end, right, where they're all skipping and singing and humming, and they photobomb those girls, and then they're looking at the thing, and they shriek, like, what's going on? And that's a little, gotcha, like, it already happened kind of moment. So.
No. Dylan, do you feel the same way, or do you have a different take?
I guess I went very literal with my watching, and I just assume they were incompetent at killing themselves the entire time. I went with the most hilarious answer of they just never succeeded, and they just kind of like, oh, what's your hobby? Oh, killing myself. Like, have you succeeded? I'm still here.
But it's also like the most in my opinion, it's the most it's the episode that does a lot with very little, right? Like, you understand the backgrounds of each of these characters with very small tells. Like, with Zebra, you wonder, and then there's that part where what was the older man's name? I can't remember what his name was. I think it was
Ben Franklin.
Fuyubachi,
that's right. Fuyubachi. And you see him pick up the locket, and it's pretty, and you see him there with his male partner. It's like, it's pretty clear. Oh, he's, you know, you can start to draw parallels. It's like, oh, he's gay, and he's probably faced some, you know, hardships because of that. And then the little girl, less so. I think the little girl is the one that I was having the hardest time trying to understand why, because, you know, that seems to be, even at her, like, even with high, like, suicide rate for students, she seemed awfully young. So she was the one that was always the big question mark. But then Fuyubachi...
Awfully happy too, right?
Awfully like... happy, yeah. And then Fuyubachi, when he was falling asleep on the train, he was mumbling the name of somebody. So, you know, to me it was like, ah, maybe that's somebody he lost and he can't live without them or something like that. So they do these little crumbs to, like, help you fill the gaps with a little bit of guidance, which I really did like.
Yeah. The old man, Fuyubachi, he's like the one who's... most likely, like, yeah, okay, when you're that age, everybody around you is kind of dying and you kind of get lonely and, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. Not good, but, you know, it's like, of all of them, you could just kind of assume a reason, but the other two, it's like, yeah, you don't really know. What was there was the condoms thing at the very end.
Yeah.
Did I just miss something? Like, what was the... Is it just like bringing it full circle to like the beginning of life? It's like, this is the family planning.
I mean, I think so. And apparently that was a like a sales motto for like a condom company. I actually saw that there was a different like a J-Dorama series back in 95 with the same title of the Akarui Kazoku Kate. Mm. Akarui Kazoku Keikaku. Which was like the motto of, I guess, a condom company. So again, yeah, it's like, I kind of took it as like kind of a whole joke of the thing of like, oh, this is like happy family planning, which was like a corporate motto for a condom, but it's also like, well, what's the family here? Well, there's like this happy family, and what's their plan is to kill themselves. Because yeah, they've made themselves into a happy family with the plan of...
And
of,
for me, this yeah. episode screamed like unused themes from Tokyo Godfather, because you have this three completely unrelated characters coming together and having these crazy misadventures, which to me was like, oh yeah, that was Tokyo Godfather's in a nutshell. So oh, man, I felt I like this was yeah. this was the most Tokyo Godfather's coded episode. If Double Lips was the most perfect blue coded, I think this was definitely the most Tokyo Godfather's coded episode. And then I think the final episode was the Paprika coded episode.
Yeah. So there that one went the opposite direction of like this one influenced Paprika. It was right. like pre-production.
Almost like experimental stuff there.
Yeah. Which was really good, but like animation wise, I really enjoyed those two episodes. I didn't quite care for the story that much. Especially the wife's monologue. Like, why do you guys think that Shonen Bat was so bothered by her? I was kind of figuring it was, he was going between like, she was, her own emotions were going between despair and hope. Like, but it didn't always seem like that. So I'm not sure.
I think it was she refused to run away and take the easy way out because her husband is working so hard to make sure that, you know, they can make a living so that she can get the medical care she needs. Because that was one of the other, I would say, messagings I did appreciate personally, was just how much he really, really, like his connection to his wife is what dragged him back from his Showa Wonderland, as I called it, which was, by the way, really cool. I love the design aesthetic of him in his imaginary world. I thought that was really cool. The whole
it was really well executed in there. Yeah. The whole thing. Yeah,
From an artistic standpoint, I did like that part a lot too. And then him, you know, him smashing it and dragging it to his way out was obviously hideous CG, but you know, that's a sign of the times. Not so much.
Yeah,
I couldn't do much about that. I was willing to overlook that, but the whole, you know, him just running away into his own safe space and then getting invaded by Tsukiko and Marumi was interesting. Like I was wondering where they were trying to go with him in his La La Land, and then they kind of, that was kind of like the main catalyst to the final, you know, the conclusion of the series.
How did she end up there? I don't actually remember.
Marumi like manifested a magic door that she dragged her through, I believe.
Like, I imagine she didn't have the same like connection to that time period he did, right? So
yeah, it was definitely Marumi doing it. And then egging her on to like integrate into it, like pretend to be his daughter, come on. And then he was thinking like, oh yeah, I always did want a daughter. And then, you know, suddenly he's basically her, taking the place of her dad, who probably wasn't the best dad for her. So there was kind of both of them fulfilling each other's, you know, unfulfilled wants in the past. And then the whole thing of his wife's spirit like infiltrating and like trying to snap him out of it was cool. And I guess that's another Paprika Coated thing, the whole like, you know, infiltrating somebody else's dream sort of thing.
So, yeah.
I didn't necessarily hate that. I thought the, you know, while the execution wasn't great, I thought the messaging was cool. Like, you know, what will it take to get him to snap out of it? And it's like him remembering, like, oh, right, I have to do this for my wife. And
coming back to the wife's monologue stuff and like why that affected Shonen Bat, because Shonen Bat at this point was definitely a moso, a delusion, and was more and more powerful. But I think my thought there is the reason that Shonen Bat left her alone and was so affected, and when she was like, no, you sit down, you listen, was the whole thing between Shonen Bat and Marumi and all of these, you know, as a piece of, you know, escapism, modern pop culture and stuff. I think the thing there was that she was accepting her responsibility and saying, no, this is my responsibility. This is my duty. I'm doing it. Whereas all of the people, regardless how much they felt trapped or not, what they said, they were all trying to kind of
try to escape it, right?
Yeah, escape and get around or cheat and rob and steal and lie and pretend things didn't happen or that they're perfect and all these other things. So
and
that's
the ones
my
that
interpretation.
Didn't fit that pattern were hit by the copycat,
right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, no, wait. Because, no, Bad Cop was hit by Copycat.
He was the second victim of Copycat, yeah. And then Copycat was not good enough to fully knock him out, so he rage-kicked him into submission.
Yeah.
He kind of bumbled into to capturing him, really, but
I really liked the that episode with the Bad Cop episode. I thought that was another one that was just, it was really good, because it's definitely one of those feels like a piece in the time as well, but it's like this character who is like a very HBO character.
Yeah.
In that he's he's very intense and dislikable, but you're like, he is interesting. He's not boring.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. No, he's a very well-executed character, but he's definitely a very detestable character as well. And they executed that. Executed him very well. Although I am a little disappointed that they didn't have a resolution at all with him. They just kind of left him and his daughter catatonic till the end, which was weird and unsatisfying.
The daughter too, right?
Yeah,
they didn't even really do anything with that either. They had the episode, which was, you know, it was pretty good, messed up, but like, I don't feel like there was ever any really resolution.
There is none. They both were just catatonic and just smiling at the sun on the swings at the end. I'm like, okay, what's gonna happen here? Nothing, I guess. They just kind of were left ignored at the end. And, you know, another one of those loose ends that was not tied up. So another casualty, I would say, of kind of the chaos of the later part of the show.
Yeah. So I did want to talk some here about the animation studio episode, which was my other favorite one. It sounds like other people also felt the same way, which we've seen a lot of these kinds of animation studio related things. There have been whole shows about animation studios. There's been OVAs with animation runner Kuromi. Shirobako is the TV show. And there are various episodes here and there with anime related things. Blue Seed has the outtakes episode where they get into a bunch of inside baseball on anime. And I always love these kinds of things, these kind of industry inside stuff. Kind of like Oshinoko has this for like the entertainment industry. And this one had a really great just dark angle to it. Just this guy who just screws up all the time. And he's just so bad at his job. And the thing I did want to mention voice actor wise is that the voice actor for his name was Satoru or whatever. They called him Saru, but his name is Saruta, I think.
It was Saruta.
His voice actor is the same one as the character Taro in Shirobako, which if you've watched that, he's also a big screw up and he's constantly messing up. And so it kind of very fitting. I recommend you watch that show. Anyways, what did you guys think of that episode? Mike, how did this fit with all the others?
Yeah, the way things just kept escalating. But it didn't seem as connected to everything else, but then it also did.
It felt very standalone.
Yeah, but I suppose they were also kind of ground zero for Marumi. Maybe the world would have been in a better place if that tape hadn't been delivered.
Yeah, I agree. That was kind of the gag at the end, was if it was because of the show that like it really accelerated, the whole Marumi mania kind of accelerated, right? It was largely on the back of the show. So,
go ahead.
I was just gonna say, I love episodes like this, and the twist they did on this one of tying it into the Shonen Bats just like whittling away at the staff who were just in abject misery anyway. I've never seen an animator in an anime who was happy or satisfied. Right, they're always either just incredibly overworked and stressed out, or they're just miserable people, and always when they're portrayed. So the trend holds true here as well.
In particular, the thing that I love the most about this was, in addition just to the characters in it and the kind of the visceral feeling of being frustrated at someone who screws up and doesn't apologize for it.
Just refuses to take accountability, right? It's adamant on it never being his fault.
And that goes back to the thing of the wife's monologue with like the, you know, kind of that accountability thing in a different way. But the same, I said that same thought there.
Mm. Oh, yeah, that's true. But the thing that I really liked about it was the way the story was told, with the basically slicing between him driving to the studio. And it kind of like the movie Memento, where you don't really understand what's going on at first, but at the farther you get into the episode, you kind of figure it out.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and then at the, you know, near the end of the episode, they make it very clear, right? Oh, this is what happened. Like, I just thought that was just really excellent storytelling.
Yeah, I thought this one was kind of also a perfect blue coated as well. The way it cut back and forth from different perspectives, I thought was, it felt perfect blue-like to me.
Mm-hmm. It was very interesting the way that they go through and explain all the different roles to you. So it's like, it's like educational at the same time.
And Marumi's like the narrator, which was pretty hilarious.
Yeah. Very dark, but educational. And, you know, you connect this to the other series that you've seen before in different ways. Sometimes I started to feel like these kinds of episodes are maybe a cop-out, because this is what these people live, so like it's very easy for them to come up with material. I mean, I'm not knocking it because I still enjoy these episodes a lot, but I wonder for them it's like a crutch. Like, yeah, you maybe, know, I just write about this
but
thing.
It's something that you just don't see, right? It's not very well documented in general.
Yeah, yeah.
So I think it's really, you know, insightful.
Yeah, I tend to like them because they are a topic the writers actually have personal experience with, so usually mm-hmm. they get it at least somewhat right.
And I'm sure, these are things that these people have actually experienced in their life before, right? Like, these are real events. Like, somebody screwed up, didn't go pick up the cuts from the animator, right? Like, or from the animation director. Somebody tripped over their cord, you know, mid...
Now, that was a terrible place to put a cord and not tape it down, but...
Yeah, right, right. It's true.
And the guy who did, like, the beautiful background in their guy, all right, cool, I got full it. Full crunch, crunch, crunch.
You just hear it crunching. I'm like, oh, my soul.
Yeah, right.
I think if these episodes and types of things were done as much as isekai stuff, we'd be like, meh, but it's not done that often. So that's why I think it's like, yeah, it's a cool thing, and most shows don't do it.
Yeah, I agree.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so that when it does happen, it's still like a treat, like ooh, yeah. One of these.
And
right?
it didn't hurt that this was one of the handful of very well animated episodes in the sea of poor animated ones. So it definitely helped.
I'm sure this is one of those too, where like I feel like there's a factor in animation where if the animators are interested in it, they do a better job. With, you know, and I feel like this is probably one of those where the animators animating these scenes that they've lived through themselves probably helps a little bit with the quality.
It's therapy of some sort of drawing out the pains of their lives. And they're like, oh yeah, that time where I felt like I was literally like dead and the guy just came and grabbed the stuff and just left. And be like, how about if he's actually dead?
We're dead.
Yeah. Well, we're coming up here close to the end. So, figure we should get people's last thoughts.
Before last thoughts, I think we should also spend at least a few minutes talking about the opening, because I feel like the opening
You did want to talk about
deserves a segment for sure.
Yeah. Dylan or Nick?
I'll just open and say I believe this is to date still the only anime opening that uses a Susumu song. Is that right?
Detonator Organ?
Detonator Organ? Okay,
does that one?
Maybe.
But that's not a TV series.
It's an OVA, right?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, yeah. So maybe it still holds true. But anyway, this is an all-timer of openings. Like, gosh, just so much about it I love. But yeah, Dylan, I know you specifically wanted to reach this topic,
so there is so much. I agree. This is just an S-tier opening. It is... And then it also pairs so interestingly with the ending too. So there's so much stuff I think here. The opening and the ending I think were really, I think there was something that Cohen put a lot of thought into in terms of execution and symbolism. It's a great opening because one, the song is just a straight up banger. And the whole thing with everybody, it's one of those things, as I watched it more and more, I thought about it where it's like, what is your perspective as the audience? These people are sitting here just like, and you're watching them and they're just like laughing like freaking idiots as the world around them is just burning and being destroyed or is already destroyed. And then you see, as part of it, you see Shonen Bat like come at you. Like, he's coming at you, because we're also there in it, as we, you know, literally to the point of the chief sitting there with the nuclear bomb going off, and then it goes out to the old man with the entire world just blowing up. And I also think there's something in there with they have the video effect of where there's a single split on the character where it's almost like the character gets hit with like kind of burst of light and like a single split comes out like from the back. So it's like a front back of a single split there. Whereas in the ending where everyone is sitting there peacefully laying down, And it's also a great ending song too, because it does a really nice job of kind of calming things down and having all this, but still being nicely done. But then you get the same effect there. You get this left, right, and you get two things splitting out of each character in the ending as it goes around. And so rather than everyone sitting there chuckling like a bunch of idiots at themselves, at you, at everything, they're just sitting there lulled to sleep by giant Maromi.
What is the thing you said you're splitting in the ending?
Yeah, so like it almost looks like the characters get like hit with like a little bit of light. Oh. It's like just a little like video effect, yeah, where you see like, right, a little kind of like almost like an echo of the characters go out to the side. But I just noticed that it was coming in and out in different angles there, but it was the same effect. So I started to get calling on it and started to try and think about my interpretation of what it means.
Interesting. Well, what do you think it means?
I think it means that we're all lulled to sleep by the Maromis or Maromis of our culture, and that we then get beaten over the head to death by Shonen Bat, which is the exact same thing, and it's the carrot and the stick, and we end up laughing at ourselves as the entire world burns. And that was a thing that felt reasonable in 2004 and feels way more high level craziness on that in 2026, at least to me. But 2004, that was also, I mean, that was the middle of our first second Iraq war. You know, there's a lot of turbulent things. I don't know exactly what was going on inside of Japan at the time, but yeah, so that's my interpretation.
I didn't read too much, you know, into I didn't go all calling on it, but I did really, I like the ending a lot more than I like the opening for some reason.
Really?
The song. Huh. Yeah. I mean, I know there's like zero animation, right?
It's about just panning to say, over, yeah, still. It's just high quality stills.
Yeah, just the extremely high quality stills. And, sure. And I don't know, there's something about it paired with the song. And it was a really good song. And it just, I don't know, felt really perfect for the show for me, especially for an ending.
I think they're, for me, I didn't really have to go deep into the analysis of what they represent, but I do love how much they contrast each other. Like, the opening is like borderline psychotic looking, and you know, they're in a very like energizing song, right? I would say that's the best way to describe Suzuma's music. It's very energizing. But then the ending is everybody's asleep or unconscious or dead, who knows, and and it's very, it sounds like a lullaby, right? You're just being kind of put to sleep, and then you just see ominous giant creepy eyed Maromi in the middle, was surrounded by her corpse circle. So it was an interesting dichotomy, and I like both. I think the show is it's for me, that was one of the highlights, was being able to always know that I'm gonna have an opening that gets me hyped up and then an ending that really like ramps it down. So that's how I interpreted it.
Yeah, I guess I will admit that I did try and read some into the ending, to be honest, not the opening, but the way that the ending, you know, I was trying to read into the arrangement of the characters, and I was like, oh, is this person more important than that other person, or is this going to be the person to be the pivotal character, and none of that mattered in the end. just totally pointless. So I think the thing I didn't really like about the opening was that it was very fitting for the show, but there wasn't a lot of animation in it. It was, you know, a lot of short loops of characters laughing and stuff
against, which, you know, insane background key art.
Yeah. Just, it's, I don't know. I usually like want the opening. It's not exclusively, not a requirement, but like I like the opening to be a little bit more dynamic about what it does. So maybe that's why I like the ending more, is the, I don't know, because it was more just not trying to be an opening. I don't know. The maybe my bar for endings is way lower. Mike, what about you?
I liked them. I don't have huge opinions on them.
Not, the opening not like particularly is, stand out?
I mean, the opening stands out. It's, you know, obviously memorable.
Yeah, yes.
Like, the opening was the part, one part of the show I definitely remembered.
Yeah.
And hey, that's an incredible statement for something, for a show you probably haven't watched in 20 years or so. And you're like, oh yeah, I remember this opening because it's like, it stands out. Like, it's so cool. Like, I'll take it as cool. You can take it as, I remembered it, but...
I mean, people laughing like crazy with, yeah, the shit going on, and starting with a mushroom cloud is... Yeah.
Yeah.
It sticks in your head.
It's very fitting. Very fitting opening for this show. All right. Now, let us approach the end. Please offer up your final thoughts. Mike, why don't we start with you, since you were just talking.
Well, I enjoyed revisiting this show. I definitely don't regret it. I'd recommend people watch it, probably, but I certainly wouldn't put it at the highest of my Satoshi Kon list. Like, I would say, watch all the movies first, and then if you want more, watch this, probably.
Yeah, actually, that's another thing I should get from you guys. I should get you where it stands in your con rankings. So where is it for you, Mike?
I don't know. It's tied for last with Paprika for me, I think.
Yeah. Okay. Dylan, final thoughts, feelings, your ranking?
I think it's a great show that's also a great mess, and I'm okay with that. I definitely appreciate that it was done intentionally as a TV show with good, like, plotting and structure around stuff there, such that it felt very episodic. And it took advantage of the episodic nature to break up the stories. So yeah,
it didn't feel like a modern streaming show in that regard, that's for sure.
Yeah. So yeah, I recommend it. I think I go with the same of, I would probably say watch it as a epilogue to your Conan Nation. And it's a cool show. It has, the highs are really high and the lows are very confusing.
Yes, yes. I'll let Nick go last, and I'm going to interject my final thoughts here in that I think everybody should watch it. I should have said up front that people should, it's on Crunchyroll. You should watch it. You can watch it there easily. We did get a Blu-ray release recently. Recently, I say in like the last 5 years. One thing I did want to mention, or two things I wanted to mention. One is that I noticed, even though it was still the old, like, flip phone, feature phone era, the Galakay era, everybody still had their heads in their phones. It was very, like, that was when Japan was way ahead in the phone technology.
Yeah, like Web 1.0 stuff.
Yeah, yeah. And that was just fascinating to see how, if you show that same image today, it would look exactly the same, just with smartphones, right, in their hands. And the one other thing that I wanted to point out that I didn't notice until way too late was that the ep titles for the episodes were
built in the
animation.
Yeah. Oh, like, yeah, so fabulously done.
Love that.
Yeah. So I wish I'll have to go back later and see where they all were. But they were so great. What was the one, the et cetera one?
Yeah, the buildings of the apartment buildings laid out. To spell,
oh no, that's not the one I'm thinking of, but that was a good one. There was one where it was something that ended in a period.
The final episode, Saishu Kai Maru.
Oh yeah, Saishu Kai, yeah, Maru. And then they did it with the wheel rolling in. That was so great.
I was annoyed that the translation of final episode doesn't have the period at the end, and I think that's missing something. Yeah. Like, it was very intentionally put there, and they dropped it. They should have had it in there.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, it was literally vocalized, right? So, yeah. All right, Nick. Oh, I should give my rankings to Dylan. Did you give your ranking? Give me your ranking.
Yeah, I said it was an addendum.
An addendum, okay. Yes. For me, I think it. I think I'm probably in the Mike camp. Maybe it's hard to say, but it's at the bottom. All right, Nick.
Yeah, pretty much agree with everything that you all said. It's, I will say the highs are the best that Kon can offer. Like it, like the great episodes really show his genius, and just reminds me of how sad I am that there really isn't anybody that has kind of been able to take the mantle of mm-hmm. what he did. I know he didn't really have proteges. So, you know, that's really a huge loss. I would have loved to see him get more shots at doing TV or, you know, non-movie stuff, ONA stuff. I really think about it all the time. Like, man, I wonder what Kon would be doing now. That's what I always come back to think when I see some of the good eps. The bad eps, I've said my piece. They definitely are. The bad eps, in my opinion, are quite the mess. But again, you know, that's what happens with experimentation. You don't always end up with tremendous successes, but he wasn't afraid to fail, which is why I respect him so much.
Yeah,
he's willing to try something, and if it falls flat, so be it. He doesn't hide from it. He lets it be. Yeah, I would agree that the Paranoia Agent, even though technically it came in between, what was it, Millennium Actress and Paprika, I do feel like it makes sense to watch it last after all the films, because I think it captures certain essences of all the films in both good and bad that I think it's a more enriching experience if you understand everything he did before you watch this, is how I feel.
Mm-hmm.
As far as placement, I would agree for the most part. I don't think it would change a lot. I wouldn't definitively put Paranoia Agent at the bottom. I'd say the highs definitely, for me, outweigh the highs of Paprika. So I'd probably say this slips into third for me, and then Paprika last. Which is funny, because Paprika is the most visually just stunning, because, you know, of the budget and techniques of all of them. But I feel like overall, it was the most messy plot. Out of them all. Whereas, again, I think just the episodes that were perfect blue-coated in Paranoid Agent, as we all know, Perfect Blue is the one I cannot continue to glaze enough. Those episodes are so good. Like, again, Double Lips, just, oh my gosh, that's such a brilliant episode. And executed with tremendous voice acting. So that episode really pulls up the series for me. Perfect Blue is still the top of the mountain for me. He hit the Grand Slam early, you know, and nothing wrong with that.
Well, but I can attest to that, having seen Perfect Blue at the Palm a couple weeks ago, so.
I complained a lot about Paranoid Agent, but that's because I think I'm passionate about it, just because it is one of Kon's last things. And, we won't get any more stuff to dissect, so I took a lot of time to kind of dive into it. But did I enjoy it? Absolutely.
I mean, even ranking it as Kon's worst, that's way better than most people's best.
Exactly. Yeah. This will be better than 90% of some of the slop that's coming out right now. I say the slop lovingly, because I watch some of the slop and I like some of the slop. But from an execution standpoint, and just like really being the passion, you can feel the passion and the eps where I feel like we're strong. You can just feel it coming out of the screen. And I feel like you lose some of that nowadays with the way things, certain things are optimized. Like just the detailed line work of some of the characters' designs, just you don't see that anymore. Everything's really homogenized again. They're very flat, you know, features. You know, you don't get so much unique. Like Fat Bastard Cop, his design is so interesting, right? He has so many jowls and lines. Like, he's such a detestable character, but that's so hard to do these days with just a design. So. I'd say I'd insert this in between Millennium Actress and Paprika for me. But again, anything Satoshi Kon is good. So ranking his own stuff against himself is almost unfair, because all of his stuff is better than, again, the vast majority of people's best.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you made a good point about the highs of the episodes being pretty good. I think I'll adjust mine and say, like, it's above Paprika just because of that. Because you can skip some of the worst episodes in the middle, fast forward through them or whatever, and just watch the good ones. And much in the same way that we complained about them being kind of unrelated, that kind of makes them good because you can just kind of watch them by themselves.
And they seem like they would do with a fair amount of rewatching just to catch the details that he was slipping in that we missed.
Yeah, right. So, all right. So with that, that's all for this episode. And until next time, this is AMO Kenzoku signing off. Saraba.